This is WGBB AM 1240 and W240 DF FM 95.9 Freeport, New York.
The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
It is time for Streetwise with former chief of the New York City Sheriff's Department, former chief of the Seagate Police Department, retired New York City detective, Time Warner Public Access Media Award, Joe Franklin Super Excellence in Broadcasting Memory Lane Award, New York Veteran Police Association Streetwise Productions, host of Streetwise, Mr. Lou Tarano.
Good evening and welcome back to Streetwise. Something a little different tonight. I have somebody coming back on the show. I'm going to say by popular demand. He's been here before, and he's got an associate partner, and I want to welcome back. He is a former New York City detective. But let me tell you something. The guy is a great author, and I'm going to just refresh your memory a little bit. Several books, several best-selling books. One of them is The Mouth of the Monster, Lethal Embrace, Hooked Up for Murder, and then recently, he's done a book in working with the New York Post. I think he was a reporter for around many years. The Undisclosed Files of the New York City Police Department, going back to the late 1800s. Michael Mladenich, I want to welcome back to Streetwise.
Robert Mladenich, Lou, great to see you.
Okay, well, what did I say? I thought I said Robert. Did I say Bob?
You said Michael, but that's
I said
okay.
Michael. You know something? Michael is sitting next to him. Michael is his partner in, not going to say crime, but they're doing a great movie that's coming up, which we're going to talk about, which can explain some things that are occurring in this country, and you might be wondering why certain things are not happening again as they were years ago. But getting back to Robert Mladenich, Bobby, is that The Mouth of the Monster is the Joel Rifkin. He was the notorious New York and Long Island serial killer. And Robert Mladenich was able to interview him in the joint up in the jail, if I'm not mistaken. And I think retired detective Bob Mladenich was the only one that was able to interview infamous Joel Rifkin. Now, Michael's here. I'm sorry. Here I go. Robert is with Michael Domino, and they're both doing a great movie, and Bob is the co-producer and co-writer. The writer and producer is sitting with me, in front of me, I should say, and he's an independent filmmaker. He's got several in the can, as they say, but this is one that's going to be coming out soon. Has to do with the manufacturing business in New York, and my understanding is manufacturing decreased in New York, and he's going to tell us why, and he's going to tell us why through a movie, and the movie is called The Expediter. I want to have Michael Domino first. Now, this movie that you're doing, The Expediter, pretty much has the flavor of you being involved in it personally, and maybe your life history. Am I close to that?
That's correct, Lou. I was given a rare opportunity to work in a office as a young man of the age of 19 in 1975. Mm.
So not too many of you give their age away. I wanted to thank you. So, all right. So we're talking about your life story. Let me ask you this now. I've noticed that the manufacturing, you know, like Donald Trump says, everything's out of the country. He wants to bring it back. Does that have anything to do with what we're talking about now, with why we're losing the manufacturing business in this country?
Yes, perhaps. At that time, most manufacturing in the United States was done more or less under one roof. So I got the chance to witness within one company, a large plant that was located in Queens, New York, purchasing, production, machines, right, engineering, all functioning as an incubator in that one spot.
Why are they not functioning now?
Well, at the time, I also was witness to the beginning, at least I feel, of outsourcing,
right,
downsizing, parts being produced in foreign countries, mm-hmm, to keep costs down.
Right.
And I guess we would refer to this as globalization at this point,
right,
in time.
Yes. So it declined, what we're saying. Manufacturing declined in this country?
Yes. At that time, it was at the, I think the apex had already been passed, and right. we were beginning to
Would
see the decline.
Just explain to our audience what apex means so they can understand what that means.
The top, the very, the pinnacle, the top correct. of the curve.
Of the curve.
Yes.
Very, very good. Of that industry.
That's correct. Of most manufacturing.
Okay. Now, you were involved in it pretty much, and this is your story, I have to say, by browsing through it and reading through it and discussing it with Bob Mladenich. This is pretty much based on you. It has a twofold. It's your life story, which helped you as a youngster, mm-hmm. right? And you had like a person that could be sort of a mentor, and the movie's about you and the mentor, correct?
Correct.
And discussing manufacturing all in one movie called The Expediter.
Right. It's a multi-layered story.
Right.
But primarily it is a coming-of-age story and also a, call it a day in a summer type of tale. Right. But there are backstories which revolve around manufacturing and also the decline of manufacturing. And there's more to it than just the coming-of-age story.
Okay, I'm going to just talk about more to it in a moment. Now, Bob, I know your background, great writer. Can I mention that you right now, you're still active in with police functions as you're a writer and, I guess, press person for the Sergeants Benevolent Association in New York City.
Yes, I'm the communications director, mm-hmm. media liaison, head propagandist
right.
for the very vocal NYPD Sergeants Benevolent Association.
I'm going to mention his name, Ed Mullins.
Absolutely.
Right. Because Ed's been out there. I tell you, I like the way he took apart Mayor de Blasio. And he indicated that he still has what he was born with.
Ed Mullins could never be accused of being a wallflower.
Right.
That's for sure.
And I got to thank you because you... I pretty much brought him here by the hand, and that's going back now when he first became president of the SBA.
That's about 15 years ago. We were here together.
Wow.
He's been reelected three times, so he's about to finish four terms.
Interesting.
As popular as ever.
Right. Okay. How are you, with your background? I know the only thing I could see, the connection with Michael Domino, is that you're a great writer. Now, this is movie, and this is you're going to be your co-producer. How does that fit in with you?
Well, Mike and I have known each other since we were kids, growing up on Long Island, not too far from here.
Right.
And Mike has always, we've both actually always had an interest in writing. Mike was very busy with his other affairs, and finally, about 10 or 15 years ago, he decided to really delve into his artistic side. Yeah. And he started making short movies. He started going around the city with his camera. And he wrote a couple of wonderful books, one of which him and his cousin went back to Vietnam and retraced the steps of his cousin, who was a soldier there during the Vietnam War. So he has a very creative side. And when he wrote this short story about his life working at this plant, I remember those days. And I was astounded at what he came up with. It just came from the heart. And I remember telling him, I get goosebumps even talking about it now, because I remember telling him, I said, Mike, whatever you do, you have to take this further. This is a story that has to be told because it's not just about the decline of manufacturing. It's not just about the changes in the fiber of the industrial Correct. American landscape. But there's the person that worked for him was a alcoholic ex-Marine who had seen battle in World War II. He was a womanizer. He was a drinker. He was a liquid luncher. He was a conspiracy theorist, but he was a hard worker. He was a patriot. He was a loyal American. And in the most unwitting of ways, he taught Michael over the course of a summer. He turned him from a boy to a man.
Right.
He never would have believed it. He never would have believed he was even capable of it. And even Michael, I think, when he was writing this.
Right.
He didn't realize what a positive influence
Correct.
A man like this could have on him. And that's what we explore. And one of the key components here, because you've got to remember the time frame, 1975.
Mm-hmm.
This man, make no question about it, he suffered from post-traumatic stress disorder in the worst of ways.
You're talking about his boss.
His boss.
Right.
But there was no name for it back then.
Right.
It was battle fatigue. It was right. battle weariness. But it, that is explored so vividly, so eloquently, so delicately,
right.
and sensitively through the eyes of young Michael.
Right.
And it's it really is a phenomenal story.
So Michael, how would somebody with all these lived issues, I'm going to refer to him as, right, how does someone like that, I know World War II, and we have a high regard for it's like a generation that will never happen again. We all realize mm-hmm. that, you know? So how would someone like that, womanizer, alcoholic, right, a gruff guy, because you showed me part of the film, mm-hmm. really rough temper and things like that. How can someone like that be a mentor to you?
Well, it was up to me to, I guess, decide what parts of his character I was going to take with me into adulthood and which parts I was just going to observe and make some decisions as to that's really his life. And so that's part of the coming of age tale here is
right.
in what will we take forward. And he was a Marine, and Marines find ways to move forward in their life despite
Correct.
Their character defects. And he was a great worker. He was a professional purchasing agent, and he did a tremendous job for this company. And what I observed from that part of his character, let's face it, the other parts were a lot of fun too, especially
right.
as a 19-year-old
Absolutely.
Kid to be palling around with this person I viewed more or less as a celebrity. He was
The difference in age between you.
Difference in age. I was in awe.
What is the difference in age at that time?
At that time, 30 years.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. He was a flashy dresser,
right.
Playboy type character. Mm. He wore a gold Marine Corps watch. He had a Zippo lighter. He dressed the part. He was inspiring, especially to a 19-year-old.
So how do you find somebody that could fit that? How do you, which you did, because I saw it. How did you find someone that actually could fit that mold, that character? I'm going to say that personality. How were you able to do that?
That's a great question, and it was one of our biggest fears going into this. Where do we find a character like this? And we marched in quite a few actors, and when David Olson, who plays the part of Jake Cutter,
very good.
When he walked into the audition room, we were actually doing it outside. Mm. We had no other place to meet on this particular day. I looked at him, and I thought this was the reincarnation of Jake Cutter.
Amazing.
I just hope he sounds good, and he did, and he was our man.
Absolutely.
He is our man.
He looks great.
Yeah.
And who's playing you?
Another fine actor. His name is Travis Kerr. He lives in Manhattan. And the same thing, when he walked on set at the audition, we got a great vibe from him. He's a wonderful young actor.
Was Bobby Mladenovic with you when you sort of choose the people that fit these parts?
He was there for most of the auditions.
Right.
Yes.
The auditions, yes.
Yes. I don't think he was there when Jake Cutter walked in the room, though.
But actually, someone like you, because you lived it. It was your life.
Yes, right.
And you saw right away that these were the people that would be great for your movie. But I got to ask you this. You know, it's a manufacturing movie, and I guess you could say the decline to a degree of the manufacturing. But why is it called the expediter?
That was my job.
The
expediter is a person that works in a purchasing department. And his job, after the buyers buy the parts under the direction of the manager, his job is to make follow-up phone calls to see that those parts are delivered so that, and we point this out numerous times, so that the line never goes down. This was the credo. No one can be responsible. No person should be responsible for seeing that the production line goes down. If one screw or one nut, a small part, is not there, then the whole item, the whole assembly cannot be produced. People more or less just have to sit there until this can be figured out. It's a very important job.
Okay. How did you get that at 19 years old? It's a very important job.
Well, what led up to this, I had gotten into some legal trouble as a young man.
Right.
And my father was the big boss of this company. He wasn't the owner, but he was the executive vice president. Jake Cutter reported to my father. And so I had had, throughout many other summers, my father would bring my brother and myself to work, even my sister on a few occasions. And we would work in more lower level jobs. But this particular summer, a combination of my father wanting to see me get out of the environment that I was in, and this job just happened to open up at the time. And he inserted me in there, and he wanted me to go under the wing of this Marine. My father was a very busy man, obviously loving and cared for me, but had other...
He lacked that, I would think, right? What the Marine was able to offer you, the ex-Marine.
Right. Either that or just the time, or just,
the time,
you know...
And
we all
and
need
maybe what about the patience and the energy? He needs that too.
All of the above.
Right. So
probably, yes.
So I'm going to ask you this. So you had a run-in with the law?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. So this sort of helped you out by working for Cutter, I think you said his name is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I was more or less just, you know, parachuted into this office. Yeah. And I refer to it as the world of men or manufacturing men. So, in other words, you know, I'm a 19-year-old boy, and I'm all of a sudden dealing with adult problems.
Right.
You know, grown men, grown women, you know, adult problems.
Yeah.
And I had a bird's eye view of this world, not only from a social standpoint, but from an emotional standpoint, and how, and also from a business standpoint.
Yeah.
The lessons learned there from my own father and from Jake Cutter and
Jake
other
Cutter.
People there have served me well in my own career.
Bob Mladenovich, but how do you fit in? You were definitely not in the manufacturing business, as far as I know.
I'm not in the manufacturing business, never have been, but I consider myself somewhat of a chameleon. Mm. I think when you're a writer and when you have such a passion for writing, you have a genuine interest in lots of things.
Absolutely.
And more than manufacturing, I had a genuine interest in this story.
Huh.
I fell in love with this story the minute I read it. I couldn't, I proclaimed it that we have to do, or Mike had to do something with this. Never thinking it would be a movie, but I was thinking it could be a short story, a book, but we could do something with it. But once we sat down and we started tearing apart his terrific short story, making it into a screenplay, we were laughing out loud. You know, we had a lot longer voiceover than we do now. We were going to do a lot of them. There's been so many incarnations of this movie. For example, Jake uses a lot of Marine Corps jargon.
Mm.
So we were going to, when he said something like Ricky Tick, which means double time, we were going to have like a typewriter on the screen saying Ricky Tick. Then we were going to have it explained in the voiceover. So there's been so many... There's been so many changes over the course of the last year. This has all pretty much been done in the last year. But every time we got together and spent 10 or 12 hours in front of the computer working on this, never once did we not laugh hysterically, but we left that venue feeling enriched and fulfilled and knowing we had a great story to tell.
The story that you're going to tell. Now, you're having the premiere this Monday, is that correct?
The premiere is this Monday.
This Monday, the date is the 21st.
March 20th.
20th, I'm a day off.
At the Anthology Film Archives in New York. There's been such a response from the people we've invited that we actually leased a little bar one block away or half a block away. And we're going to have a full screen in there as well. So there's going to be seating for 170 at the or 180 at the Anthology Film Archives, which is a very old theater in New York.
Right.
And then there's going to be seating for about another 100 at the place Rosie's.
No, it's called Cozy Cafe on East First Street. It also functions as a hookah bar.
Right.
Hookah meaning the pipe smoking.
Not in my time.
Not what you're thinking.
Not in my time.
Not what you're thinking, Lou.
Right. That was I was going to go there for that reason. You know, but all right. So the exact address on
45 East 1st Street.
Right.
Corner of 2nd Avenue.
Right. It used to be called the Lower East Side. Now it's Soho or whatever, something like that, I think, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or
right.
East Village.
Right.
East Village, they call it now. It used to be the Lower East Side. My own neighborhood, by the way, although 2nd Street was like uptown to me, pretty much, because we were like south of Delancey Street. As my executive vice president and producer of the Joe Franklin Show for 30 years, he would say the lowest of the Lower East Side, because he is from the Lower East Side as well. And we just called Lower East Side, but he was right. We were the lowest. We know if you walk two blocks, you were in the East River. You know, you can't get any lower than that. You know, in fact, I used to swim in the East River. But I can understand. I know that's where I learned how to swim, in the East River. Imagine that. So, but I can understand. Now, using an area, I mean, where are you going to shoot? I should say, have you been shooting this film, this independent film?
The real action took place in Woodside, Queens.
Right.
We shot in Long Island City,
right,
primarily. We also filmed in a bar in Brooklyn,
right,
in East New York. And, I'm sorry, East Williamsburg. And we have a scene in Manhattan, in Stuyvesant Town.
Yeah.
And Astoria Park, we also filmed in and around Queens.
So actually you're supposed to take place in the manufacturing district of New York, is that correct? What I say?
Right.
To be accurate to say that. So so it takes place, you as a 19-year-old young guy, and your boss at that time, Jay Cutner, was the ex-Marine. And so actually what he was doing from just talking to you guys is that he did what he went through in the Marines, break you down to build you up.
Right.
Much.
He used a lot of derogatory terms, not just with me, but with other underlings.
Correct.
But as time went on, he then began to build me up. The derogatory terms stopped. There's one scene where he, when I first come into the factory, he begins to call me Michelle, which is, you know,
instead of Michael,
something that Marines do.
Yes.
And then there's a tender scene where he, for the first time, he calls me Michael, and this is noted in the voiceover.
Wow,
so this is part of the coming of age transition that we tried to portray in film.
So actually, he watched you grow up to it. I guess by calling you Michael after calling you Michelle, you know, because they, you know, in the Marines, let me tell you, I've had so many Marine friends, close friends, and they seem like they were all related, you know.
Yeah.
What can I say? I used to call them head cases. Of course, in the business I was in, the cop business, and even before that, if I worked in the Marine, they were all, strange guys.
They are a breed apart.
Oh, they are. It's all breed, yes.
One thing I'd like to just interject is that before I put pen to paper on this story, I did spend 2 days immersing myself in Marine Corps slang.
Mm.
So I'd go into character of Jake Cutter so that when I did write, the words would come out smoothly. His vocabulary became my vocabulary as a writer.
We
kid around all the time.
We speak to each other,
and we have a wonderful time with it. So colorful.
Yes, but the problem is it's not politically correct now. You can't do it now. Can you do it and get away with it? You can in the movie, probably.
We still do it.
You said something before about turning boys into men.
Uh-huh.
The transgender group of Long Island just actually rallied out a friend of mine who has a gym out east, because when he advertised his grand opening, he says, we turn boys into men, and they actually went on social media and criticized them for saying that, and I had said, speaking to Marines, I say, when I was a kid, they said, become a man, join the Marines.
Mm-hmm.
You can't say that now, because if you read some of their languages that's in there, and I want to discuss that with you, because you're going to use everything that they're against, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
So they say, you have no right to tell your son when he's a boy what he should be when he's an adult. Imagine that. It's his choice. If Michael wants to be Michelle, he could be Michelle.
Well, on the way here today, when we left Manhattan, Bob said to me, well, would you like me to pick up something to eat on the way here?
Right.
And I said, sure, get me a cup of coffee. And he said, don't say coffee. It's Rusty Old Joe. So we use it. We still use it.
Good.
And we laugh all the time about it.
Good.
And I said, Ricky Tick, corner of East 3rd.
So in the movie, you're actually going to use a positive, what they would consider not politically correct. You have to, because this is Marine jargon.
It, Yes, because we needed to portray the people and the times. So it's a period piece. So to be true to the period, we didn't sugarcoat anything, correct?
I know, but, you know, just expect that there'll be some organizations that will actually, you know, make, which would be great for you. Because let me tell you, they made a hit out of my friend's gym. You know that? And they got their 15 minutes of fame, but he got the fame. So, you know, Bob knows controversy. His books are all...
If it's good for the film, it's good for us.
Absolutely.
All the film tell... We're not trying to make a political statement with the film, but we're just telling a tale.
Right.
You know, 1975 New York.
Right.
Especially manufacturing New York.
Yeah.
Was a lot different than 2017 New York. Mm. And we are very true to that era.
Right.
You know, there's women, lots of women in the movie.
Yeah.
And women working within the within that manufacturing plant. Mm. And Jack treated them or spoke to them in phrases that, you know, today might be viewed derogatory.
Yeah, it would be.
But it was just his manner with everybody.
Right.
He wasn't... it wasn't men, it wasn't women, he was just everybody he spoke somewhat derisively to, but it wasn't mean-spirited. There was really nothing mean-spirited about him at all.
And my guest, Robert Mladenich and Michael Domino, the movie that's they're doing a premiere of it, 20th Monday, and it's called The Expediter. Looks great to me, but it gives you an idea how a young person could sort of his whole life can be changed. Because of a job, a position, and looking up to a person who's actually controversial, but yet he had great points. And then what you did was, Michael Domino, you took his good points. That's what you did.
Yes, and, I'm very grateful to him and many other mentors in my life, but he's one I've chosen to stay with me even now that he's passed. He's still with me.
Oh, okay. So you didn't become an alcoholic or a drunk. You just took the good points. Although I'm not saying that's bad. Come to think of it, you know.
He was a good man. Mm. Still is.
Let's talk about now. So this is open. This premiere. Are you inviting?
We've sent out invitations.
Right.
We do have a pretty good crowd coming.
Right.
Is it safe to say anybody wants to come?
Really?
Just come. Oh. We'll find a place for you.
Well, that's
We do have the second venue.
Right.
And we want as many people to see this movie as possible because there are a lot of lessons to be learned in this movie, even in 2017.
Well, I think the timing is good. And timing is everything. You know, and people are sort of, young people today are struggling for identity. And sometimes people think they don't have a shot in life. They're losers and stuff. There's always hope. And you're a good example at Michael Domino because you had a run-in with the law, got yourself a good job. As they say in Sicilian, you became a mensch. You know? Again, let's give the location of the premiere.
The film is going to be shown at 7 p.m. at the Anthology Film Archives in Manhattan. That's located on 2nd Avenue and East 2nd Street. We're going to have a satellite showing one block away on 2nd Avenue and East 1st Street. There will be a reception at 6:30, followed by a Q&A after the film.
Interesting. I think we'll take a break now. Well, we have to take a break now because it's sort of the half hour, and then I'll be back with my guest, Robert Mladenich and Michael Domino, and we're going to take a break. We'll be right back. Don't go away. It's interesting, and you'll learn a few things like I am right now. Lou Talano, hang in there. Come right back in 1 minute.
As As a doctor, I see patients every day who are losing their vision to age-related macular degeneration, also known as AMD. If you have blurry vision or blind spots, they can be symptoms of AMD, and if untreated, could lead to blindness. The good news? AMD can be managed with effective clinically approved treatments that may reverse some vision loss. For free AMD information, contact the Foundation Fighting Blindness at 1-800-BLINDNESS. That's 1-800-BLINDNESS. There is a cure in sight.
How to be a great dad in 15 seconds. Bike ride, go fish, walk in the park, phone call, milkshake, play catch, picnic, fly a kite, tell jokes, laugh, talk, read a story, tell a story, bumper car, swing set, bowling, pillow fight, cut loose, stay tight. Whew. Because the smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Lou Talano, we're back, but before I come back with my guests, the other day was a terrible tragedy. A New York City Fire Department EMS worker, young lady, Yadira Arroyo, 44, was killed on duty, and she has five children. And we're trying to get donations for her family, five kids. She was on the job 14 years. Some dirtbag, and I could say that, 31 previous arrests, stole the ambulance. She went in the back. He was hitchhiking in back of it. She went back, actually to help him, and he was in the, behind the wheel. He backed up and ran over her and took her life. Five kids, they call her Yadi. Everybody knew her as Yadi. Yadi Arroyo. If you want to make a donation, you make it to the Tunnel of Towers Foundation. Tunnel of Towers Foundation, and you just say where you want that money to head to her, her fundraiser, so to speak, for her and her kids. And Tower of Tunnel Foundation is a 718-987-1931. 718-987-1931, and that's the Tunnel of Towers Foundation, was created as a result of a fireman who ran through the tunnel to try to get to 9/11, and he died when the tunnel collapsed. Foundation was created for first responders, and Yadi Arroyo, we're trying to get donations to her and her family. Again, phone number 718-987-1931. All right, I'm back with my guests. Guys, I make public service announcements. This is not a great announcement to make, but I hope it's hope it's some help to the family. Also, by the way, you can call 311 in New York City to get more information. There's a direct, not 911, please, not 911, 311, and you could tell them what you'd like to do, get involved in that. All right, I'm back with actually emergency responder, because he was a New York City detective, Robert Mladenich, and he's involved in a movie called The Expediter, and with Michael Domino, pretty much based on Michael Domino's, I would say, life story to a degree. And Robert Mladenich is the co-producer, co-writer. Now, Michael Domino, I know you were 19 years old, and I know you grew up looking up at a role model, I would guess, who was an ex-Marine. But how did you turn this into becoming a writer also? Because you are you're writing your own pretty much story, movie.
Correct. I over the course of my life, I was always jotting things down. I used to write things and send them into Newsday, mm-hmm. get things published. So I like that. But
right.
as some of my life responsibilities became a little less, I took up writing. Bob was a big influence in that decision, and it's something I would do for my soul, and it made me feel good, and I like to wander around with my camera, as Bob mentioned, and some days I would leave my camera home, and I had no way to capture the images, so I began to record them on paper. I would tap them out of my BlackBerry, and so the writing became like a lens of my eye through my pen.
Yeah, I got to ask Bob Mladenich, who is a great writer, by the way, all his books and everything else. What do you think of Michael as a writer? First time around, I would think.
what I, as I mentioned before, when he sent me that story about his formative experience, the formative experience working in that manufacturing plant, I couldn't put it down. I think it was about 30 pages long.
Wow.
I read it in one sitting, and I said, I remember calling him all excited and just saying, you have a phenomenal story here. I don't think you realize how good this is, how unique this is. Actually, we were out, which Mike reminded me of. I didn't remember that. We were out with an acquaintance of mine who fancies himself a writer but really has never published anything. And he was pontificating that there is nothing original out there. There, it's almost impossible to create original product because everything's been said, everything's been done, everything's been made. And I don't know if Mike was a little disappointed hearing this, but I remember after he reminded me of this incident, I remember telling him, that's a bunch of BS. What you wrote is one of the most original things I've ever read.
Yeah.
And I think that those words resonated with him. And from there, this thing just flourished over the course of 10 years. Like I told you, there's been a lot of incarnations, but we finally came out with a product that we think is really does justice to the formative experience that Mike enjoyed, so I'm saying that loosely, with this man. And we also pay homage to World War II veterans, to American ingenuity, to American manufacturing, to the workforce, to the multicultural workforce, to women in the workforce. We pay homage in a sometimes very funny way, sometimes very sad way, but always evocative.
You know, it's multicultural. You're right. The manufacturing business has always been multicultural, or, you know, and similar to like the garment district, I'm using that as an analogy, where people work together from all different walks of life. And you as a 19-year-old, you're getting a feeling of that, which you're probably being a spoiled brat, a kid from Long Island, right? You weren't aware of that. So until you got into this to this business.
Now, Lou, you
I'm sorry.
You should just jump back to cop mode.
Yeah, I will.
He wasn't from Long Island. He was from East Cupcake. That's what we used to call the people from the suburbs.
That's
we're
right.
all from Cupcake.
That's right.
I had an interesting visual on the way just driving here from the city, and I remember walking through the factory floor.
Right.
And, you know, it was all nations and actually food of all nations. And I remember prior to microwaves, one of the methods that people from various parts of the world, whether they were from, there were Haitians there, there were Dominicans, there were Asians, you name it. There was people from all over, from India. And one of the ways that they would warm up their food was by finding a machine, a hot machine, maybe that was melting something.
Yeah.
And they would place it on there like a half an hour before break or lunch.
Yes.
And I just remember, you know, walking through on errands as the expediter and smelling. Each department had a unique smell. And so that's a real example of multiculturalism.
Actually, my old neighbor, the Lower East Side, was like that. If you walk into a tenement building, you would smell the pasta, somebody made pizza at home at one time in the ovens. And then you would go on another floor and you'd somebody making gefilte fish, you know?
Exactly.
And then it'd be Greek food, you know, it'd be.
And languages, you know, I picked up Spanish there, I picked up a few words in Chinese.
Very interesting.
And this has stuck with me.
So your education came out in Cupcake Land, I guess that's what Bob is alluding to.
That's right, he learned how to read and write in Cupcake. He learned about life on the manufacturing floor. And Lou, what's really important about this movie and about Michael's wonderful description of what it's like to work in amid people from all these nations.
Yeah,
that is true Americana. That's what America's all about, is all of these people working together, heating their food on these hot machines, and that's captured very well.
You know, I don't know how this change came in this country, because I mentioned the neighborhood that was born and raised in. That was called the melting pot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of a sudden there's all kinds of this guy's a racist. This person's a racist. This politician is a racist. I don't recall that when I was a kid. Truthfully, the melting pot was the melting pot, and you worked actually in the melting pot, Michael Domino. So, which in itself was a great education if you're growing up.
Right.
Right.
And so, our cast reflects that. The cast of the film. We have people from many different countries.
Jay is your cutter, was your boss, and then you have a young fella playing you. How did you you had to do a lot of people doing auditions, right?
Right.
And how were you doing auditions of to fit the characters of the people or personalities of the people that you worked with all these years?
In the independent film world, you have to be rather ingenious and get things done for little. So we posted things on Craigslist. There's a wonderful site called Casting 360, word of mouth. People want to get involved in the project. There's a woman here on Long Island named Deborah Markowitz who acted as our, you know her?
She's my guest every year.
Wonderful person. Yeah. She did, I think actually.
Are you one of the films that she was promoting at this recent event she had in Belmore?
No, maybe next year, it wasn't this year.
Yeah, she does it every year. She promotes the movie industry out here.
Oh.
And she faithfully comes on, actually before the fellow who she was working with, they would both come on. And the Long Island Film and TV Foundation.
Yes, if she's listening, thank you, Deborah. Thank you so much.
Oh, good, yes. Well, she was here about, whenever that film foundation was, she's like here a week or two before. Promoting it, and she brings somebody here who's doing a movie. So hopefully we'll see you at Debbie Markowitz's movie next year out here in Long Island.
I hope so too.
Yeah,
we casted people that we know. We have a good friend of ours who's a waiter in the Bronx at Patricia's, and he made a great character actor. Plays a bartender named Julie the Suit. He's a bartender, and he also gets things off the back of the truck, and this is why our character, Jake Cutter, is such a flashy dresser, you know, using less money would have to use.
That was one of our expressions when we were a kid. Where'd you get that from? That fell off the back of a truck.
Mm-hmm.
If you remember that.
We addressed that. We addressed that as well. That too. There's a lot in here.
Robert Milanich and Michael Domino, are you guys in the film itself? Are you
in
the movie?
But Bob is.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay, I got to ask you, Bob. What's your part? What's your role in
that? He has a great part.
I have a great part. I play one of the buyers. There's four buyers, all of which are referred to very derisively by Jay Cutter. There's Dickie Doo, the camel driver, the shyster, and I'm the beak. Because anybody watching, if you look at my profile, you can understand the nickname. That's actually a nickname I had as a young kid. So we figured we'd use that for the movie. But one thing I just wanted to mention, you guys were talking about the casting a second ago.
Correct.
One thing about this acting world, Lou, which I think we were both kind of unaware of. You know, we would put up, we might be doing a factory scene, and we needed somebody in a rush, and Mike would post. He's much more computer savvy than I am. He would post on this website that we need somebody in a hurry, like in an hour, 50-ish, not afraid of being around cigarette smoke because a lot of people don't want to be around.
Right.
Would be great if you're willing to smoke because people did smoke back then. And we literally had a woman at the factory within an hour. She was in her dentist chair. She got the ping from this. Can we mention the company on here, Mike?
Yeah, it was. I believe that was Craigslist.
Craigslist.
And I guess she gets pings when there's jobs because you very often do need people in a pinch.
Wow.
She had clothes with her. Some people keep clothes in their car because you never know when this is going to happen. And there's this whole world amongst actors, you know. They weren't getting paid a lot of money. This was a very low budget movie, Lou.
Some don't get paid at all.
They would spend 10, 12, 15 hours.
I know.
They were thrilled to be there. We were thrilled to have them. They have so much positive energy. You know, actors get such a bad rap for being prima donnas. At this level, all I can tell you, they're an absolute pleasure, and that goes for the young ones, the middle-aged ones, and the older ones.
Yeah.
And I have such a newfound respect for that profession because they work so hard. They get involved in their character so quickly.
Yeah.
They don't require a lot of instruction or direction. You basically tell them what you're looking for.
And
you can see their wheels spinning, and then they're in character. It's incredible to watch.
Well, if they become successful, maybe do become, not they, but many of them become prima donnas. You know, it's part of that industry, you know, so to speak, and they it becomes natural because we, you know, my opinion of Hollywood, they're all prima donnas. You know, I'm not talking about independent movies. You know, independent.
Well, at this level, they're an absolute pleasure to work.
Yes, they're happy to do it, and it's something that they like. It's like when you went to work as a cop, you like going to work. At least I hope you did. You know, so and it's. People in the movie business, they love doing it. You gotta have a passion for it. Now, 10 years, you guys have to have a passion for this. How the hell? And you know what I've seen in my lifetime, when you see a hit or something that's great, then you realize, holy, they started this 10-15 years ago. Some of your top movies that are out there were actually created, Bob, you know, this like 15, even 20 years ago. Some of these movies that won Academy Awards, and people think it was done that year. It was on paper 10 years before that. Now, you put this on paper 10 years ago, is that correct?
That's correct.
And
I had a couple of false starts. I took the script. I had written a very simple screenplay based on which followed the original story to a T, and I took it to other screenwriters, screenwriters, and to produce a, you know, adaptable format.
Right.
And they wanted to add all sorts of things, murders and sex, and you know, all this skullduggery. And I almost pulled the trigger a few times on those versions, but it never felt right. I even invested some money, and I just had to, you know, once again pull the plug on the whole project. This went on. I had about 3 false starts, and I think all the people around me were questioning me and saying, why are you doing this? You wrote a good story.
Right.
Stick to the story. The people who actually knew the story and the characters felt that, you know, you did it. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. You don't have to make it something bigger than it is. And once I finally was able to understand that and just stick to the basic story, that's when it took off. And almost a year ago to the day is when we began to create the screenplay that we've adapted the film to, and look for actors and crew and locations and costumes and all these things that we did. We combed many, many thrift stores looking for vintage props. And
we had to find, for the 70s.
Exactly. Yeah. We had to find vintage cars, sets, offices that had.
You just had to have me standing in the corner talking about vintage and stuff from that era. And then
we needed a factory.
I might have some of my clothing in the closet from the 70s.
You actually would have made a great Jay Cutter. You have the look.
Oh.
You got the hair.
Well,
you got the.
I was going to say you may be the Chinese delivery boy. Can I say that? But that's what we have. We still have. You know.
We're thinking about doing another one, so we'll look for something to cast you in.
Okay.
You have a good.
It.
You have a good look.
Oh, thanks. Thank you.
I just want to add one thing about the screenplay.
Yeah.
This movie. Was so what makes this movie so wonderful is its simplicity. There was no need for embellishment. When you have a great story, you don't need embellishment. You know, one of my favorite movies, a lot of your viewers might remember this,
right?
Because they tend to be a little older. But the movie Marty, with Ernest Borgnine, 1955.
Yeah,
it's one of the simple little love stories, but it's absolutely beautiful. And there was no need to have murder and skullduggery and crisscrossing in that movie. And that was one thing that these other so-called adapters, you know, were saying, well, it's too simple. Nothing. That's nonsense. Everybody that has seen this movie, some people have walked away with tears, or they say they get goosebumps. It's just a beautiful story, and when you have a beautiful story, you don't have to exaggerate it. You don't have to embellish it. You just got to tell the darn story.
Bob, what a great analogy. Marty, with that made Ernie Borgnine pretty much up there. Did he win the,
he won the Academy Award for that movie, and the movie won Best Picture?
Imagine that, of a movie. It was just a story of a cab driver living with mommy, something like that, very basic, you know, because someone would say, ah, what's the big deal? You're working in a factory and your life story, what's so interesting? But Marty is a great example. Of course, people like those stories. You know, Jack Lemmon did a few movies that I like to do in New York that were so basic, they became hits, you know, because they think today sex sells, you know, like you said a moment ago, it's murder and sex. You think you have to have that in a movie. Doesn't jive with what you're doing. Don't even connect to there, you know.
Realism. So,
realism
is the key.
That's what
here
people like.
Is the key to this story.
So,
a lot of
yeah, that's my thought. I think the... And today, people are looking for something, looking for realism. You know?
Look no further.
Yeah.
It's in The Expediter.
And look no further. Look at The
Look
Expediter.
No further than the Anthology Film Archives at 7 p.m. on Monday, and there'll be free eats.
Free
yeah.
eats.
And wine,
and
beer.
You get to ask questions.
Wow. We could ask questions when we go there, right?
Okay. I have to stop at JCPenney when I leave here and get a red carpet. It's more like a red bath mat in keeping with our micro budget.
Well, I was going to say, you know, how can these independent film takes a few bucks, and how are you guys able to afford that, to do that? Because you'd really, you pretty much, you get a lot of people that would do it because they want to be actors, and they're hoping it'll be a success. So a lot of them probably don't even have to pay, I would assume, because I'm familiar with that, you know. But it's still an expense. It came out of the pockets of Robert Mladenovich and Michael Domino, or did you have investors, if I may ask you that?
Sure. I'd be glad to answer that question.
Yeah.
Thanks to my other business endeavors, and thank you, Jake Cutter, for calling me a shark and not a minnow, giving me the confidence to go out into the hard, cruel world and learn how to make some money. I self-funded this. It's on a micro-budget level.
Wow.
But yes, I save my. I'm a good saver, and I. Some people like to buy fancy cars. Some people like to buy, you know, three sets of golf clubs, and that's fine and good, and it makes them very happy. This is what makes me happy. So this is where I tend to place any disposable income that I might be fortunate enough to have, and I am so. This is I like to put it into the arts.
No backers. You're pretty much the investor. You have any backers or people interested in being backers?
We'll find out after March 20th.
Have you shopped it, as the expression goes?
Up until now, our focus has just been on creation.
Right.
We have not taken our eye off the ball. After March 20th, perhaps we'll have some time to focus on marketing and networking and meeting with agents. But right now, it's just been about the vision and now, keeping our minds on the target.
Right. Obviously, you want to get a vision from your premiere that's coming on the 20th in Lower East Side.
Yeah. Now, I just want to, if I could say things, although my contribution was financial, Bob did. He gave this his heart and soul, the thought process, his time. We shot a scene in his apartment. We cleared the whole place out. We had to put it back together. We have met countless times at restaurants, walking down the street, hundreds of hours.
Well, Bob is full of patience. You can see that.
He burned a lot of brain cells.
A lot of patience.
One thing that I think is really important to mention, Lou, is not only are there great characters in this film, but New York City is a character in and of itself.
Oh, absolutely.
And we list all of the locations in the credits at the end of the film. And it's very important that we mentioned this film was filmed entirely on location in the city of New York.
Right.
And all of those places are mentioned. We're very proud to be New Yorkers. Mm. We're very proud to be filmmakers in New York. And we find that the city itself is as much of a character as Jay Cutter and Michael Romano.
Just like Marty was.
Just like Marty.
Marty, absolutely.
One of my favorite films of all time.
Well, my guests, Robert Mladenovich and Michael Domino, they're producing and writing their movie, that's coming up, the Expediter. And you may think it's like, it sounds like almost like a Lethal Weapon or something, you know, or something like that. But the Expediter, you would think it's a cop movie, you know.
But the title is catchy.
It is catchy.
We're very fortunate to have arrived at that title.
Yeah, it's almost like the movie The French Connection. If it was The French Connection, then it turns out to be a great cop movie. Mm-hmm. So it's tricky. And Marty itself was the guy's name. Just Marty, mm-hmm. right? We could have called the movie Jay after your boss. That's a nickname, Jake, right? It could have been that, and that would have been great. Now, what are you looking forward to? What reaction that you're looking toward when you do this premiere? What do you want from this when you promote it? What are you looking forward to? Are you looking to exposure, pretty much? Or who's going to be there you think maybe play a role in this, or a big role in it?
Our minds are open.
Right.
We'll see what happens once again. But yes, of course, this is a artistic creation of ours, and we would like to share it with as many people as possible. We think it's there's a lot to offer. Mm. Emotionally and story-wise, and it's entertaining too. Wow. There's some very funny parts in there, and one of our best compliments could be at the theater when we just see people laughing.
Right.
And also we might see a few tears in there. So it's great. Part of us that we want to share. Beyond that, from the business aspect of filmmaking, of course, we would like to see it do well critically and financially, and because we actually have plans to do this again. We were already toying with the idea of creating a story I had written called Park Avenue to Park Bench, also another New York tale about an entrepreneur who's actually in the radio business who fell from grace, and he fell into this network of social care, and he's a lot of problems in his life, and how he has to rearrange things. And this would also once again be a very New York tale. So just to be able to do it again, and yes, receive some financing this time, would be a tremendous success.
Wow,
it's all about artistic expression, Lou.
Right,
and the journey is the best part, and maybe the next film will be about Lou Talano.
Well, that's going to take forever because that's how old I am. Okay. The address again, it's going to be the premiere on
the Anthology 20th. Film Archives, March 20th, 6:30 p.m., East 2nd Street and 2nd Avenue. Can't miss it. Be there. Be a lot of fun.
Be there. Mm-hmm. Right. That's very good. Okay. I want to thank you guys, Robert Mladenich and Michael Domino. And I tell you, I didn't get this feeling, you know. Because you know, manufacturing, you know, people working in the manufacturing, I guess, as a business, and what could be so interesting. But you guys, I'm telling you, I got a great interest. And if you get down there and watch the Expediter, the premiere with Robert Mladenich and Michael Domino, I think you'll learn something that I've pretty much learned in this 1 hour. So hopefully you come back when the movie's out, and we'll talk about it. What theater they're going to see it.
We'll be back.
All right.
Thank you, Lou.
I want to thank you guys. Robert Mladenich, Michael Domino, The Expediter, and Monday, 20th, at 2nd Avenue and 2nd Street.
Thank you, Lou.
My pleasure. This is Lou Talano, and I'll catch you later.
You've been listening to Streetwise on the station that serves your community, WGBB AM 1240 and W240 DF FM 95.9.
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.